broadcasting from the Unshackled Studios in Melbourne. This is Wilmsfront, brought to you by theunshackled.net. Now here's Tim Wilms.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to tonight's show. The date is Wednesday, the 26th of February, 2020. It is 7 p.m. here in Melbourne. We are live on the Tim Wilms YouTube channel and also DLive channel. Second night in a row for Wilmsfront, but we are back on a scheduled night and time. We've got a traditional topical show for tonight with a featured guest. I'm joined via Skype by Kiralee Smith, who is the director of Binary Australia, which, as the name affirms, that there are two biological genders, male and female. Obviously, it's basic science, but it's the current year, as they say. Binary campaigns against the degendering of our society, and obviously focuses on here on Australia. You might remember Kiralee as the face of Halal Choices and the Halal Action Movement. Kiralee, thanks for joining me tonight.
Thanks for having me, Tim.
Now, before we discuss the main topic tonight, your activism with Binary Australia, I just wanted to ask you about your past activism on Islam and Halal certification. It was broken in the Nine newspapers that the Q Society of Australia, which you were somewhat associated with, is deregistering. It described itself as an Islam critical group. They feared lawsuits under the Morrison government's proposed Religious Discrimination Act, and you were also subjected to a lawsuit by Halal certified Muhammad Al-Mahawi. So I asked you about that lawsuit in the previous episode we did, but I just want to get your opinion on this Religious Discrimination Act, because it was, a lot of Christians were in favor of it after same-sex marriage was legalized, hoping it would give them some legal protection. But then we've seen the Q Society deregister because they worry that this will act as a blasphemy law. I know that you're a Christian. So what are your thoughts on it? Because it's in its second drafting stage now. It's turning into an incredibly tricky thing to get right.
Yeah, look, I haven't gone in depth into it, Tim, but from what I know about it, I think it is fraught with danger whichever way we go down this path. It doesn't, the more you get government involved in things, the more potential there is to stuff it all up. We see that with, you know, issues across the board, and this seems to be an extremely complex issue, and I'm reserving a lot of comment and judgment at this point because it's not looking great at this point.
I certainly think that's a wise approach to take, and this is what I myself have been worried about from the beginning. Now, what are your current views on Islam? Because we are still seeing Islamic immigration. Obviously, Binary Australia is now your focus on. We just had the ASIO annual national threat assessment last night, which did still warn about Islamic terrorism and foreign fighters. And obviously, Halal certification is still taking place. Is that a cause you're still an issue? You still have quite a lot of, I'm not sure if passion is the right word, but are you still focused on that?
Look, it's not a part of my daily focus anymore, but my views haven't changed. Islam as an ideology, I think, has a lot of problems, and I think that we should be able to criticise all ideologies, all ideas. We should be able to engage with those things and, satirise, mock, criticise, analyse, you know, all of those sort of things. And I think that Islam must be subject to all of those things. I'm very disappointed that, we worked so hard with the Halal Choices and Halal Action Movement to get the Senate inquiry, to get some very reasonable recommendations before the government. And it's just been either passed around or swept under the carpet. And it really is a very big disappointment of mine that it hasn't gone any further. And I think that It's still an issue. It's an issue I comment on my Facebook and Twitter accounts. It's something that when it's in the news, I'm very happy to make comment on. But in terms of action now, there's not really much more I can do. We've raised the awareness. We achieved the Senate recommendations. They just have to be implemented now. And I think the coalition government is quite gutless in all of those areas, and obviously all the alternatives will be even more so. Perhaps some on the crossbench may take it up at some point. I have tried, and I feel that now the area in binary that I am making a difference, that we're producing results, that we're getting somewhere, and so I'm putting, you know, most of my passion and time into that this issue at the moment.
Well, the reason why the gender issue is in the news cycle every day, because that's the thing, it's something the Islam and Halal certification, it's not something that the mainstream media likes to focus on anymore. And I think the Liberal Party, it seems that their view is that there's a lot of Muslims now in Australia, we'd rather more focus on getting their votes at election time than anything else.
Oh, look, that's possibly the case. And, you know, thankfully we haven't had any major terrorist activity, you know, that's directly affecting Australians. But I suspect that there will be a time when it happens again, unfortunately. And again, my argument has never been with Muslim people or with individuals. It has always been with the ideology, what the Quran says, what the Hadith say, what the so-called Prophet Muhammad did. And that's the level that I engaged in the debate.
And I'd say I'm not trying to put words in your mouth, but it's the same approach I should take here as well, that it's not individual LGBT people who are the problem. It's the radicals who are in charge of these advocacy groups, the anointed LGBT spokesmen. They're the ones who are trying to degender society, have these infinite genders, and trying to control our language, where we can't even be sure if we're able to say sir or madam anymore if we see encounter a stranger.
Exactly. So I'm very much concerned and focused on the gender agenda, the ideology, the ideas, the concepts. I'm not about criticizing individuals necessarily. Adults can choose to behave and identify however they like, but I like Islam. I have a problem when that is imposed onto me or imposed onto society in such a way that it does affect our laws, it does affect our daily interactions with one another. And for women in particular, I speak as a woman now, and sometimes I don't want people to get upset about that. I'm not a man. I don't identify as a man, so I'm not going to speak, you know, as a man. I'm as a woman, I know I'm not speaking on behalf of all women, but there are many women that I am speaking on behalf of, and my daughters, and I see how they're affected when it comes to sport, when it comes to safe spaces for females in change rooms and toilets and the like. So I speak a lot about that, and I'm quite comfortable speaking about that, but there are some men are affected by this issue too, and there's some amazing men who are speaking out about this as well.
Now, Binary Australia, it grew out of the ashes, so to speak, of Marriage Alliance, which was a traditional marriage group founded by Sophie York. At the time, she was in the Liberal Party. She stood as the lead candidate for the Australian Conservatives at the last federal election, which is now deregistered. Cory Bernardi is now retired from the Parliament. Was the rebranding a concession that the same-sex marriage issue was lost? Because it definitely feels now it's 2.5 years on that same-sex marriage, it's the law of the land, we're gonna have it for however long Australia exists, is how I see it.
Well, it definitely is the law of the land, and you know, we have to move beyond that. That's certainly the case. But throughout the plebiscite and the campaigns around the yes vote and the love is love, many, many voices, including Marriage Alliance, were warning about the consequences of degendering marriage. And so Binary was born out of that to basically, well, it is a bit of an I told you so, but more so that we can continue to address the consequences of degendering marriage, which is now turned into degendering the society, which is what we warned about all along. So if what you say is correct, that we will have same-sex marriage or degendered marriage until, you know, the end of time, then we will have binary till the end of time, because we will be here defending two genders, male and female.
Well, we saw that Australian marriage equality, which was a single issue organisation to achieve, as they termed it, marriage equality, they're now called Equality Australia. So they certainly haven't said to themselves, okay, we've won, we can just go and get married and then that's it. Certainly there are a lot of LGBT people who just, that's just what they wanted, and they have got married and got on with their lives. But it's clear that the activist class, as I just explained, they're now called Equality Australia, talking about other issues that they deem necessary for LGBT advancement.
Yeah, absolutely. Because, as we said, you know, to degender marriage, you have to degender other things. It does mean, you know, changing the storybooks, changing the narrative around family, changing the narrative around men and women and our our place, our roles in society, I guess. So, yeah, it's not a surprise to any of us who were engaged in those campaigns that this is exactly what has happened.
And as is always the case with, if you want to call them cultural Marxists or revolutionary radicals, they do want to change our society. And of course, how's the best way to radically transform a society? You start with children, shaping the young minds in schools. And this is something that leftist academics have been very good starting years back now. And Safe Schools, that was first introduced in Victoria in the early 2010s, designed by the Marxist academic Ros Ward. Just to give our audience an update on her, she's now founded a LGBT group called Homos Against ScoMos, which is a socialist alternative front group. So there's your designer of the Safe Schools program there. But we all know the history of it. It was sold as an anti-bullying program. We need it so vulnerable young people don't commit suicide, which obviously we don't want to see bullying and youth suicides. But it had the beginnings of this gender ideology, basically saying that for there to be LGBT acceptance, there needs to be complete degendering. That's what needs to happen. It's not simply about respecting someone's lifestyle. It's about that we need to basically forget that there's male and female.
Yeah, look, I mean, there's so much in what you just said, Tim, and, you know, back when we first started, some of your first comments were, you know, the goal of Marxism, well, there's many, but is to deconstruct the family, because the family unit is one of the strongest units that society has, and it's where we bring up our children, it's where we have independence, it's where we have freedom of thought and freedom of expression, and that's a great threat to those Marxist concepts. And so the more that can be deconstructed, the more control that can be given to government, the more successful, I guess, those Marxist ideas will become. So it is something that we, again, warned a lot about in the lead up to degendering marriage. And we always knew it wasn't just about two people getting married. This was the end goal, to deconstruct the family, to increase the size, scope and reach of government into our families and into our lives, so that we're seeing now, like the Religious Freedom Act and other very complex laws that are based on things that can't even be measured, you know? Like, you cannot measure a person's feelings. There is no measure for that. And yet they want to write into law that people can identify however they feel, that they could change the way they feel. People change the way they feel every 5 minutes, let alone every day. In some states now, it's legal to change your birth certificate every 12 months, you know?
That's what we've got in Victoria.
a statement of fact. It's a historical fact. So now we have governments in the business of rewriting historical facts, changing biological science, and upholding over and above all of that someone's feelings. Now, I think that as a society, we need to be respectful of one another's feelings, but we certainly cannot write legislation and enforce those things and penalize people because somebody's feelings are hurt. Like I said, there's no measure, there's no way. You know, we know if someone is assaulted, that there's a very firm definition of assault. We know definitions of, you know, breaking speed limits or whatever, you know, the laws are, but now we're moving into this realm of make-believe, and it's not working out well, and it's going to be very destructive.
Yes, there's a danger when we start having subjective laws rather than objective laws. And as you said, we should respect one another. And I definitely take the Jordan Peterson approach that if a person has generally transitioned, I will use the correct pronouns, but I'm not going to support a law that compels me to call somebody Z or Zer. I mean, I even call Jessica Yaniv a she, but I still know that they're a sex creep and a horrible person. But you get what I mean there.
I do. And look, I know for me in individual personal engagement, I will make that decision depending on the relationship with that person. But as an activist, as a voice for concerned people, as a, I guess, you know, when I want to go in and lobby politicians and make a point, I'm very against compelled speech in every realm in that sense. I think that it is unbelievable that we're even having this conversation, that again, we want to say that biological reality, that science, that historical facts are no longer relevant, and that feelings supersede those things. Well, we're going to end up with chaos if we continue down this pathway, and we're already experiencing some of those things.
And it's not like transgender people are something new. They've been around for 50 plus years, but there was always an understanding. I'm not sure if you have heard much of Catherine McGregor. She's regularly on Sky News, but she says, I'm a trans woman. I'm not a biological woman. I don't speak on behalf of biological women, but that's transitioning to a woman. That's how best I could live my life. But you can't. They're trying to even say that they're not real women. That's where we're getting there. We even saw Sadiq Khan recently. I saw that you picked that up as well. Tweet, and they seem to repeat it. Trans women are women. Trans women are women. We're not saying this because we're being mean. It's the biological medical reality.
Absolutely. And look, I have transgender people that follow me, many obviously not supporters, but I do have some that support my view in the sense that, yes, trans women are men who identify, imitate, pretend, whatever word you want to use. They are biological males who appear in a feminine form, and vice versa for trans men are not real men. They're women. They're biologically women, scientifically women, but they present as men. And I think we haven't really had a problem with this for throughout history, because that's been the understanding. Nobody's really minded that. If as an adult you're a man and you want to dress as a woman, go for it. That's fine. It's now the issue of that being imposed through compelled speech, through people losing their jobs, through men entering into women's bathrooms, men going into women's sporting arenas and things like that, that now it is an issue where there are these extremists, these activists who are trying to say to us that trans women are women. No, they're not. They're not women. They are men who present as women. And if we keep it at that, there's not going to be too many problems. But unfortunately, that horse has bolted.
And the activists have seemed to have done a good job in basically diminishing just how much of a life-changing decision and invasive it is to medically transition from one gender to the other. As as we all know, you can't change your chromosomes. Trans women, for example, they have to keep taking estrogen tablets every day so they don't turn back into the male body. But we've seen it glamorized, that it's cool to be transgender. And I just remember 15 years ago that there was a lot of transgender people say, I hate that I was born this way, that I have to go through this process, but this is what I feel I have to do. We've seen it sort of made, I'm sure you've definitely heard of the expression trans trenders, that it costs, in some cases, hundreds of thousands of dollars, invasive medical procedures, makes you infertile there. There's the due diligence, careful considerations, and it's affected the medical fraternity as well, that some doctors, psychologists are afraid to just basically make sure that this process is used sparingly and it's carefully considered.
Absolutely. And, you know, you were right that people with gender dysphoria deserve a lot of compassion and grace and understanding. And I think that's really necessary. And unfortunately, as I said, there's been some extremists and activists. Your word was glamorized. I think that's a good word for what's happening. Because there's a few things that I want to touch on what you just said. One is that when you listen now to particularly young women who have bought into this trans trend and had started the process of transitioning and are now realizing no amount of surgery, no amount of medication can turn them into a man. They're not going to achieve what they want to achieve. They've stopped that process. They don't want a lifelong commitment to taking testosterone. Many of them have already cut off their breasts or lost their wombs through hysterectomies. And it's absolutely devastating to realize for them and to listen to their stories that changing your body doesn't actually change your mind even in these things anyway. And as you said, the healthcare workers are put in this incredible dilemma now. In Queensland, they're currently debating new legislation. They've had an inquiry and they're threatening to put doctors in jail for 18 months if they look at some of these psychological issues that are causing the dysphoria, if doctors refuse to go down the medication or the surgical tracks of transitioning, which is just horrifying. Like I said, when you start listening to detransitioners right now who are saying they had other issues. There were other issues that need to be addressed, and that masking those issues with a bit of medication or surgery or makeup or clothing, it doesn't do it. It doesn't resolve the actual dysphoria that they had in the first place.
And Daniel Andrews here in Victoria, he is proposing a similar ban on conversion therapy. And I followed the Queensland debate. And again, it's this vague, subjective legislation that it's deemed, as you just said, conversion therapy. If you basically look if whether there are other factors as well, because it has been proven that young children, they do have gender confusion in their early years, but a lot of them come out of it. But we are seeing, was it four times fold increases in children presenting to gender dysphoria clinics. And children, if they, like boys, if they want to paint their nails, if girls, they want to play rough and tumble, just let kids be kids, let them do what they want. If boys want to play with trucks and girls want to play with dolls, let them. It doesn't mean that, it's actually where I get confused at times. Are these people who are forcing this transgender ideology, are they trying to reinforce the gender binary or not?
Yes, exactly. And that there is a lot of confusion and it doesn't make sense because they hark back to rigid, outdated stereotypes of what a man should be and what a woman should be. And we've all done so much work on moving beyond those stereotypes. And yet here we are today and they're saying, if you're a little boy and you play with dolls and like to wear dresses, you must be a girl, which is just ridiculous. Boys can be feminized and girls can be masculinized, you know, for lack of better terminology, and that's okay. They're still girls, they're still boys. At the very essence, biologically, factually, scientifically, and all of those other things. And so to reinforce rigid, old-fashioned stereotypes is very harmful and very detrimental. And you mentioned that the statistic is something like between 80 and 90% of all children who have gender confusion or dysphoria, if they are left to go through puberty naturally without any intervention, they will desist. Which means that a boy who thinks he's a girl will get through his teenage years. By the time he's an adult, he'll say, you know what, I am a boy. I might have feminized likes or characteristics or expressions. That's okay. The majority of them turn out to be homosexual. And, you know, that's fine. That's not the issue. The issue is when we start to pump these young children through full of puberty blockers, hormones, or intervene with surgery, it's almost 100% of them will then continue on in that transitioning process. And not enough studies have been done, not enough research has been done, but what we do know, as you said, is that they will desist if they're left to their own devices. So this really does reek of political activism of the worst kind that is affecting the most vulnerable people in our society, our children.
And this phenomena of trans regret, it's not fake news, it's not a vast right-wing conspiracy, to use that term. There is actually lawsuits now in the UK being filed by young people who've undergone this transition, and it's contrary to what the left believe. We don't take any glee from that. It in fact breaks my heart that the fact that these children have gone through this when they weren't meant to. It wasn't right for them. We don't want that.
Absolutely. It's horrendous. I'm regularly in tears watching YouTube videos. And, you know, I now communicate with several of these detransitioners via Twitter or other social media accounts. And, my heart really does ache for these young people. And some of them are so incredibly brave to share their stories and to share the difficulties. Many of them will actually say they're very left-wing in their thinking, but they don't want to see other young people subjected to what they've been subjected to. And it's quite scary to think, you know, that there are so many doctors or nurses or psychiatrists in this country and around the world who are too scared to address these issues and to speak truthfully. But there are some, you know, I'm greatly encouraged. I think it's the National Association of Australian Psychiatrists. They're starting to make statements about these things. There's groups of endocrinologists. There's other doctors who are putting forward submissions, who are speaking to government, who are saying, hang on, you know, we really need to slow this train down. It's out of control, and young people are the victims here.
Because the gender transition, it makes you permanently infertile for men, boys who take estrogen, it's irreversible. You can't reproduce. So that's a lifelong consequence of that. Hence why it's a really dramatic decision, and it should be carefully considered.
It is very dramatic. And, you know, while we see the ridiculous headlines of, you know, pregnant man or whatever, you know, we see guys with beards who have been on testosterone, taken that off and have still been able to fall pregnant. Unfortunately, you know, that's the very rare example. And most examples are that all of these people end up infertile or with lots of other health issues as well, such as bone density and osteoporosis and other things that they're starting to discover. So again, you know, I feel it's such a difficult area or arena to be in, because these are people's lives, these are people's futures that are being debated and discussed in many ways. But I think that's also one reason that I'm so passionate about this fight, because I don't want to see these young people in particular go down this path that, you know, We all sort of make fun of it or say, but, you know, kids can't drive, they can't get married, they can't get a tattoo. You know, there's so many restrictions we place on children for good reason, because their brain development isn't complete yet. They don't have the capacity for reason and understanding long-term consequences. And so it is absolutely beyond my comprehension that there are so many politicians that will just give in to the activists' demands in this area.
And the left these days, they like to use children as human shields. I mean, you just have to look at the climate activism, where the well, it's basically the same thing as the safe schools. The teachers training the young people to be activists, giving them a day after school to go to these climate strikes, and then you've got Greta Thunberg, the 16-year-old who's being used as this face of the climate movement. And the argument is, how dare you attack her? She's a child. Even though we're not attacking her, we're attacking the ideology that's being forced upon her. And they do the same thing with the transgender issue, that if you criticize the transgender movement, that you're attacking vulnerable children. And I know that Binary Australia copped a lot of criticism for, you termed it the PNC anti PC pack for parents about gender issues at their school. You launched it at the New South Wales Parliament with Mark Latham, which, well, they don't like him much either. Can you just explain what this pack is? And
So it's the anti-PC, anti-political correctness, PNC, Parents and Citizens Pack, and we produced thousands of them, and now they're available online through binary.org.au that you can download. There's about 17 pages. We have in the pack things like recommended book lists to avoid, you know, or to be aware of that these books could be in your library, and they're very much about the indoctrination of children, what to do, how to protect your child in school, what questions to ask your school, you know, what are the issues? If there is a transgender student at your school, what happens with bathrooms, with school camps, with school sports, with change rooms, all of those sort of things. We just recommend some pathways, I guess, in that, and offer some resources to concerned parents and citizens. And it was a great response. Yep, we caught some flak. We're going to cop flak. You know, anytime anyone sees my face, I cop flak. I don't care. It doesn't bother me at all. But what we've done is be able to equip and link up. You know, there's a lot of parents, a lot of grandparents, a lot of people in our communities who are very, very concerned about this issue and are just not sure what to do. Where we've had examples of schools inviting transgender priests to speak to their students without parental knowledge or consent. We've got, particularly in Victoria, reports of schools where school counselors or the school will, you know, use the students' preferred pronouns or change their name at school, but not tell the parents. Things like that. So now our focus is on this parental rights campaign because we're realizing this is the next stage where, you know, it's a real Marxist kind of activity to separate the child and the parent and to empower a child to think they've got so many rights and but no responsibilities, I guess, in all of that.
You've just
So.
unlocked in my memory there. I remember there was a story, I can't remember how long it was, but there was a non-binary teacher who wanted to be called, because obviously in schools there's Mr., Mrs., and Ms., they want to be called Mex, MX. And the students didn't know how to adjust to this, and the parents weren't informed as well. I'm not sure if you came across that. It was in Australia, to my knowledge.
Okay. I've heard. You know, I don't know that specific case, but I've heard similar things. And again, putting children in a position to make adult decisions is completely and utterly unfair. It's very much about political activism. That teacher is a male or a female. That's it, full stop. And how they want to behave and be spoken of outside of school, that's fine. Most schools have a policy on how teachers are to be addressed. It's usually, you know, Mr. Smith or Mrs. Smith, depending on whether you're a male or a female. And it's a very irresponsible place to put children in that position. And parents should have a right to know what's going on in that school. And again, you know, this is what I'm campaigning on in 2020, is to give parents that right to know what's going on in their schools, to withdraw their children from political activist type classes, which that one sounds like it would be.
Well, we found out recently just how far the Marxists, the radicals are in the bureaucracy and public service, because there was that new a school in Fortitude Valley, which is in central Brisbane, where they're going to have gender-neutral toilets all throughout the school, except for the change rooms there. And Anastasia Palaszczuk and her education minister had no idea about this. And when they were alerted to it by the Courier Mail, and mainstream media from time to time does do good work, even somebody like Anastasia Palaszczuk said, yeah, that I didn't know about that, and I'm going to reverse that.
Yeah, which is fantastic. And it's great that there is still that ability to do that, and that there is still enough common sense around. You know, we do know there was a lot of parents, and particularly parents of girls. But, you know, I know a lot of teenage boys would be extremely uncomfortable sharing that space with girls as well. So it really does work both ways. So that was a good decision in that case. Unfortunately, there's quite a few universities around Australia that, you know, have taken that step to degender their bathrooms. And it staggers me, you know, there's on one side of the debate this hoo-ha about rape culture. And then on the other side, they're all saying, but everybody should share a bathroom. And you're like, well, what are you setting yourself up for there? It makes no sense to me whatsoever, other than to expose this is, again, it's political activism, pure and simple.
Yeah, as I said before, it's extremely confusing, and particularly, I mean, and some public toilets, I'm not sure if you've seen, they're those sort of those individual cubicle blocks that some councils install, where they're fully enclosed booths there, and so you do feel safe in them, even though they are gender neutral. But yep, this is a school with children, as you mentioned, teenage girls, teenage boys, and we've heard stories coming out of the UK where this is enforced on young children, and some of the girls are not going to the bathroom at school. They just don't feel comfortable. They'd rather just hang on.
Yeah, and they're getting urinary tract infections. And, you know, for girls moving into puberty with menstruation and, you know, just feelings about their body, they need a safe space to go to. And boys are the same. You know, we all know the stereotype of, you know, hormonal teenage boys and how rampant and sexual they are. But it's just, that's not true. It's not real. You know, there are many, many young boys who feel very uncomfortable in sharing that space. They're going through their own issues in development, and that's the one place in schools that they should be able to feel safe.
The fact that these decisions have been made by bureaucrats and not elected politicians, it's been talked about in the news a lot, that it seems to be the public service, the bureaucrats who are running the show, and the politicians don't have a clue until we see the end result. And we do live in a democracy. It should be politicians who make the final call about everything, and they should be kept informed. It's they who should direct the bureaucrats to do what they want. And it's obviously happening with this issue here, but it goes to a wider issue as well. You basically have to wake up your local politician to what their own department or office is doing.
Most definitely. And look, sadly, the reality is that politicians care about the vote. That's what they care about. They care about the election day results. And if they don't hear from their constituents, they will believe and swallow the lie that the media or others are feeding them, and particularly the bureaucrats and the lobbyists. They're very vocal. They're very outspoken. They're very persuasive. So, you know, just everyday ordinary citizens need to be contacting their local MPs, contacting the senators, and telling them this isn't on. We're not accepting this degendering of every aspect of our society. And just one little example, this wasn't the only thing that caused the swings in the last federal election, but, you know, we had a billboard banned that was simply about drag queen story time, had an image of a drag queen in front of some children reading a book, and a quote from Louise Pratt, I think it was. Sorry if I'm wrong there, it's just my mind's gone a bit blank, but basically that Labor endorsing that drag queens are a great idea for kids. We didn't make any other comment on that billboard. It was banned, you know, up and down the highways everywhere. So we got a truck. We put it on a truck and we drove it around three stronghold Labor seats. And each one of those seats saw a 3-5% swing against them come election time. Now, there were other issues that were campaigned on, but I do really believe that in those areas that did make an impact. And when we can present this to politicians, it's funny, you know, we do talk to politicians behind the scenes and they're like, oh, this isn't an issue in my area. Well, yes, it is. And when they start hearing from the voters in that area, they will realise they need to take a stand and make a decision on these things.
And when their phones and emails go into meltdown, they pay attention. And as you said, politicians at the end of the day are concerned about votes getting re-elected. I mean, the perfect example is Labor's Joel Fitzgibbon. He was on board with Bill Shorten's renewable energy target. Then when he nearly lost his seat, he's like, yeah, I love coal.
Yeah, I mean, it's really disappointing. I mean, politicians don't need to qualify to be a politician. It's a popularity vote at the end of the day. Yes, I'm quite disillusioned with politics at the moment, but I can see that that's what we need to do. We need to be loud. We need to be vocal. We need to be consistent. We need to present the facts, and we need to empower the voters. And that's what I'm all about. I want to empower the mums and dads, the grandparents, the concerned citizens. And so you do have a voice, and your voice matters. And again, you know, we've seen some marvelous results. I've uncovered several books that are extremely inappropriate in our libraries being promoted to young people, and we've done some campaigns in asking people to send emails, and we've had tens of thousands of emails sent to libraries about these books, and those libraries were not too happy with us, let me tell you. But it's effective, and it's really important that people don't underestimate how powerful their voice is.
And the next stage of this degendering push is that we're now seeing, I'm surprised they have, well, they probably will push for a degendered sport period, but trans women competing in women's sports. And as we've established earlier, we're just stating the scientific biological reality that trans women, they still have the male chromosome, and even if they do pass the hormone test, that they've got the amount of estrogen and less testosterone to technically compete, they've still had all those years as a biological male. And you can see with the weightlifters, the wrestlers, the footy players, they stand out, and they can easily use their already accumulated male strength to overpower the female athletes, which is both not fair and it can be dangerous as well.
Yeah, it absolutely, it's incredible to me that we even are having this debate, that women have fought so hard for so long, and men have fought on behalf of women for so long for equality, and in the terms of meaning that women do have their own sporting categories. They, in their own right, can compete in a whole range of sports and have been so successful and inspirational and amazing in so many ways. And yes, now we have, you know, male cyclists saying that they identify as females. We have, whether it's handball, AFL, rugby, wrestling, boxing, it's all across the board. And it's devastating for the women in those sports who are labelled transphobes if they speak out. I think of the young girls, Selena Soule and others in America, who missed out on college scholarships in athletics because of two transgender athletes. And you know, these boys have been through puberty, so their bone structures, their muscle capacity, their lung capacity, their chromosomes can never be changed, no matter how much medication they can have. And in most cases, even when they say that, you know, their testosterone levels have to be lowered, it's still much higher than that of what a female can naturally produce anyway. So it's not just the testosterone issue. It's a big issue, but that's not all. But at the bottom line, at the end of the day, it's not fair. It's not reasonable. It's not safe in many instances. World Rugby, I believe, is this week considering their options and have admitted that testosterone or lowering testosterone alone is not enough. This will put women at risk, and we've already heard of injuries that some women have had in sports competing against males. And it's devastating for me. I have two daughters who are very sporty, very competitive. And when you do comparisons of athletics, rowing, cycling, all of those things, you know, you'll have the finals and you might have 9 to 12 male athletes and not, you know, even the last place in a men's final or a male final, Well, still absolutely excel and beat the best in a women's final, you know, over and over and over again. And that starts in the teenage years. So it's unacceptable to me that this is an area where the activists want to go. I've got a video, you know, about Cricket Australia on Twitter that's had tens of thousands of views. To me, trans rights and women's rights are mutually exclusive. They cannot stand up together. It is one or the other. If you choose trans rights, you are trampling women's rights. I don't think that choosing women's rights is trampling trans rights. However, I think that there can be, whether it's trans competitions or you have this measurable boundaries for sport, which is biological facts. And biological facts state you are a male or you're a female and you compete in that category. And that's what's fair, that's what's safe.
It seems to be another case that sports administrators, they're too scared to offend the trans lobby or these trans athletes who want to participate and hurt their feelings, where you just have to be, sometimes you just have to be forthright, frank, like, look, obviously you love sport and obviously you felt you wanted to gender transition, but as you said, women's rights and trans rights are mutually exclusive, and there's a whole lot more women in sport than there are trans women. And so you just have to say, look, not everything in life is fair, but we just have to go with what is fair overall. And this is at a time when women's sports itself is booming. Cricket, soccer, and AFL becoming fully professional for women. We want to encourage women to participate in these professional sports to increase there's been a lot of criticism of AFLW. If you get more talented athletes in there, then it raises the quality. And this is basically putting a spanner in it.
Yeah, and the issue too, I mean, there's activists have infiltrated every area, and particularly in sport. And we know that there are these activists in some of these sporting arenas. But unfortunately, or fortunately, I don't know. I mean, to me, this house is going to crumble because where LGBTI and so on have all been lumped in the same group, the L's, the lesbians in particular, are realizing, oh, this wasn't such a great idea, because there is a real conflict with trans women in particular who are claiming to be women. And of course, lesbians are same sex attracted, not same gender attracted. And there is a difference. And many accepted this, this grouping, I guess you'd say, altogether. And it's happening in sports, it's happening in every arena, that lesbians and trans are at odds, and this will continue as well because they can't coexist and have both of their rights met adequately.
You've mentioned the success you've had with your campaigns with Binary, which it's an online advocacy group. Obviously, there's binary.org.au. You have your email list, but you're also dependent on mainstream social media, Facebook and Twitter. And I've noticed, because I follow both Binary Australia on Facebook and your personal Kirrily Smith New South Wales, that you seem to get a ban all the time for your advocacy.
Yes, well, just last weekend there was it was wrestling, and I know wrestling is fake, but I made the point that the transgender woman, the man, was in the female competition. He won, and I said he was a cheat, a fake, and a fraud. And why is it that these men want to get into sports and beat up women? So I was banned for 24 hours for saying that. And I'm not apologetic in any way, shape or form. I still don't understand what man on the face of the earth thinks it's okay to get in a ring and beat up a woman. I just don't think that's acceptable at all. Not in the name of sport or theatre or anything else. It is absolutely and utterly offensive. I think that's a discussion we should be able to have, but Facebook and the faceless people behind Facebook, see it otherwise. But, obviously my supporters in particular are outraged at that, and we won't be silenced because, it is unacceptable that there is such compelled speech, censorship on our speech, and the inability to have a reasonable, rational conversation about these things.
Twitter is just as bad, in some cases even worse, because there was one person who was banned for, as it's termed, dead naming, which is using a trans person's birth name, which is really when you're getting into the Orwellian arena, that you can't mention a trans person's name in the past tense. Like, for example, if you're talking about Caitlyn Jenner 20 years ago and you refer to her back then as him, Bruce Jenner, then hate speech, when that's just the historical fact.
Absolutely. And again, it's this rewriting of history and calling it hate speech that's absurd. It is not hateful. What's hateful, you know, particularly in the instance for me being banned, was that a man can take an award reserved for a woman, that he can get in a ring and beat up women. You know, it's hateful towards women that these men can do that. And yet I'm accused of hate speech for presenting the facts, for speaking the truth. And it's become absurd, and it actually diminishes the activists' arguments, I think. It does them no favours when this happens, because it exposes and highlights how stupid the whole thing has become.
And this area, cancel culture, as it's called, a lot of people who speak out against it fall victim to it. In Australia, the most prominent example, you talked about rewriting history, Margaret Court. She'll be the greatest female tennis player, if not the greatest female athlete of all time, 24 Grand Slams. No one wins. No one's singles Grand Slams win, I should say. She's won 64 in total. No one's ever going to beat that. That is a incredible record. And rightly, that arena should be named after her. But because she believes in traditional marriage, and she has spoken out against safe schools and gender transitioning children, they want to take a name down off the arena. What do they call her? Something like the annoying auntie of tennis. And you saw, of all people, John McEnroe criticize her, the tennis brat. And if you've heard Margaret Court speak for herself, she is an incredibly compassionate, loving person. She doesn't hate anyone. She's got, obviously, her Christian views. Her Christian church does a lot of charity work. All I hear is just a sweet old lady. I mean, to a lot of people, she may have some old-fashioned views, but that's no reason to erase her from history. I'm not sure if you've met Margaret Court.
I haven't met her, but, you know, I agree with everything you've said just there, that she comes across as a very compassionate, authentic person who, has a view that may not be held by everyone, but, you know, neither does John McEnroe, neither does Martina Navratilova, neither does nobody. We're not going to agree with anybody 100% of the time on anything. And, you know, if we start dismantling every single person who's achieved something, and we will always find reasons why we should cancel them. Absolutely, we could do that. But as a mature, grown-up society that's moved beyond the infantile, you know, dummy-spitting stage, we should be able to acknowledge people's achievements and celebrate those achievements, regardless of perhaps those views that they hold, because those views aren't actually a threat to mainstream society. They're a threat, to the activists, but they're not a threat to us in our daily life. And it is incredibly sad in terms of Margaret's situation. And I'm really encouraged by how many people do support her, but it's, again, these very loud, vocal, powerful activists, you know, and the corporations, I think, is such a dangerous thing where, you know, they really need to stick to their own business and not move into these realms of commentating on social issues, because, again, it's just chaotic, it's messy, there's no consistency, there's no boundaries, and it is not, you're not able to measure it in any way. It's mob mentality, and it's infantile.
You mentioned what its official title is, corporate virtue signaling, and we've seen ANZ release what many people describe as quite an abrasive ad for Mardi Gras. I'm not sure if you've seen it, but it's supposedly for love speech, but it's quite offended a lot of people, which shows that you just can't please these activists all the time. But obviously, the other high-profile sports star to fall afoul of not having the acceptable views was Israel Folau, and you mentioned the corporations there. There was a lot of suspicion that it was the sponsors that put pressure on Rugby Australia, Raylene Castle, to say you should get rid of him because look what he's saying.
Yeah, again, I mean, it's just horrendous. You know, I know growing up, you know, high school for me in the 80s and 90s was, there was a lot of people who were coming out at that point and being celebrated in coming out. And a lot of the one-liners were, you know, you don't have to worry about what we do in the bedroom. And, you know, it's moved so far beyond that now because they want to bring it, you know, onto the streets, into our corporate, you know, you can't buy a plane ticket without thinking, oh, what does this company represent or who am I banking with? And, you know, it's the cancel culture. If we took that on, I mean, I don't know who you can support anymore. It's such a mess of, you know, you just have to boycott everyone and everything. But most conservative people or reasonable people, again, go, well, I can keep that in a compartment of, you know, well, I'm just doing business here. I don't have to know all of your political associations or ideas or what you think about every single little social issue. And yet now corporations think that it's great for advertising. But as we've seen, you know, there's a great little expression, go woke, go broke. And that's happening over and over. Procter & Gamble are leading the charge in that one, losing billions, not just millions, but billions of dollars when they insist on traveling down this path. But I was also just going to take the opportunity here to say, you know, they often package it up as something so innocent and harmful and pretty and colourful and beautiful. But when you actually delve into, you know, whether it's Mardi Gras, whether it's drag queens, whatever it is, it's a very confronting amount of, you know, the sexuality, the vulgarity, all of the things that are the immorality that's there. And for ANZ or Qantas or whoever it is to package these things up as pretty and beautiful and nice, you really don't have to scratch the surface very far to realise, hang on a minute, that's not something that we want our children exposed to. And in fact, most adults just want to get on about their daily life without having that in their face either. Keep it in the bedroom.
And when I see an advertisement for a company, I want to see, do I want to buy that? ANZ, it's in the Banking Royal Commission, it was revealed some of the stuff that they'd been up to. I want to know in an advertisement, why should I open up an ANZ bank account? And there was another ad that comes to mind. There was a Sprite advertisement which showed a mother chest binding their trans teenager. And that was the whole ad. It wasn't that I should drink Sprite because it's tasty.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I think for ANZ, it's a big distraction from, you know, their dreadful practices. And it's just virtue signaling by all of these organizations. It's completely irrelevant to the product that they are, you know, trying to sell us. And it's very tiresome, I think, for a lot of people. And they are meeting a lot of backlash because their finger's not on the pulse. They live in a little bubble, like these marketers or these activists. You know, they might be, again, very loud and very vocal, but they live in a bubble. That's not reality. It's not what people are thinking. And thankfully, you know, for all the ills of social media, it's also some really good things that come out of it. And that's where we get our own voice and we can have our say. And most of us are saying, we've had enough. We're sick to death of it. We don't want it.
And of course, those on the social justice side, they're not immune from cancel culture. Of course, J.K. Rowling, the author of the Harry Potter series, she retrospectively made Dumbledore gay. But even she could recognize an absurd situation where an academic lost their job because they refused to respect the pronoun of a clearly biological male counselor with not much hair and a beard, lost their job over that. And the UK is just it's ridiculous, both in terms of both the cancel culture, losing your job and that, and also the fact that police are investigating people for transphobic tweets, misgendering. When you're at, there was that autistic boy who was arrested by a transgender police officer because they just assumed from a distance they were the gender that they looked from that distance.
Yeah, it's absolutely staggering. And again, it comes back to this: feelings are not facts and feelings are not measurable. So you cannot have laws where you change the boundary line all the time and change the finish line. And, you know, J.K. Rowling found that out. People have been arrested in the UK are finding that out, that, you know, one day someone who looks like a man is a man and the next day they're not. And, you know, the line just keeps getting moved and blurred all the time, and politicians need to do what they've been voted in to do and to make laws that are safe and prosperous for the entire society, not some tiny little extremist group that is making unreasonable demands based on feelings.
And now some of us, when we're out in public interacting with people, maybe in work or social environments, we don't even know whether we can use the word sir or ma'am. I'm sure you've seen the video of, as I call it, GameStop ma'am, who goes ballistic because she thought heard the service clerk say sir, not ma'am, and knocks over all of the games there and threatens to call the corporate affairs department. The joke was that for a trans woman, they displayed a lot of toxic masculinity. But a lot of people, like, that's not just a, like, we're lucky that was captured on camera. That could be, I hope it's not more common than we think, people getting in trouble for just it's using the sir or ma'am.
Well, look, I guess it's possible, but I can only speak for myself and encourage my supporters to say, just speak truth, stick to the truth, stick with reality. Don't be intimidated. Don't back down. Don't be afraid, because we're right. We are, you know, not just on the right, but we are right. We are correct in appealing to biological facts, to scientific facts, to reality. And so, you know, I think that activists are successful because they use bullying, harassment, and intimidation techniques. But the best way to stand up to a bully is not be intimidated and to stand your ground. And so I'm standing my ground, and I encourage others to stand their ground with me.
And as we established at the beginning, you've been in activism now for nearly 10 years, and so you definitely haven't been bullied and will not be intimidated.
Absolutely.
Oh, thank you so much, Kiralee, for joining me tonight. And we had a brief catch up at the beginning and then got into the crux of your new line of activism, or your transition of activism, if pardon the pun.
I will. Thank you, Tim. It was great talking to you again.
Thank you. And good luck with future campaigns.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
And that concludes tonight's show. Obviously, there was a lot of other news that occurred today. There was another Democrat presidential primary debate, which was much more interesting than the whole bunch they had last year. At the Las Vegas debate, they all turned on Michael Bloomberg. This week they all turned on Bernie Sanders. They've rolled out the Russian agent accusation against him. Buttigieg, Bloomberg, all went after him. So it was piles on the burn there. But I'll comment more on that on tomorrow night's Uncuckables, which is 8:30 p.m. Melbourne time, on the Uncuckables YouTube and DLive channel. There'll be, I know that Wilmsfront programs have been all over the place at the moment, but there will be no Wilmsfront on Friday night. There is another event taking place, which is very important for me to attend. But I will definitely be back next week. Wilmsfront, 7 p.m. Melbourne time, Monday, on the Tim Wilms and DLive channel. Hopefully I get Entropy working on my YouTube channel. There's I did something. It's my own fault. I messed up the accounts and that. I don't know how to fix it on Entropy. So I'll have to send them an email on that, which is very annoying. A lot of people have accused me of ignoring your questions. This is the problem without Entropy, that there's no central place to put the questions there. So if you've got a question now, I know that Kiralee has gone. Please just put them in the chat now, because I've got a bit of time before D Bell Tran has her weekly live stream at 8:30 p.m. Melbourne time over on her channel. Mel McPhee said, "Hot date." No, it's not that exciting. But yes, definitely Uncuckables will be at its scheduled time tomorrow night. But even though Wilmsfront will be back at its regular times next week, we've also got the move of Trans-Tasman Talk, or it might be called Trad Tasman Talk, 6 p.m. Fridays on the Unshackled and Right Minds NZ YouTube channel. So we're doing that there, so I can finish a bit earlier on the Friday. So there will be no Wilmsfront on Fridays. It'll just be Monday and Wednesday nights. So saving up for, and then we've got on Tuesday night in replacement, we've got a second Uncuckables, which will be at its regular time, 8:30 p.m. Melbourne time. Now people are speculating, what are my marriage plans? I'm not going to go into that too much at the moment, but I think we'll stick with the idea of Maddie and I proposed a Rational Rise TV reality show. Timmy wants a wife. That's, I think, what we proposed. Be Randy Billing, get Timmy to the gym. Yeah, something wouldn't hurt me as well. There's, what is it, Dusty's push-up challenge. I should really get onto that. We can all take better care of ourselves. That's the main thing. Two Uncuckables a week, Australian Protectionist Party, we will be spoiled. Yes, so there'll be two Uncuckables, two Wilmsfront, Trans-Tasman Talk, XYZ Live on Mondays, Medi Rose Live on Saturday nights, and then there'll be, well, Patriarchy Hour with James Fox Higgins. That's normally at 10:30 p.m. Sydney time on Tuesdays, but it's on tonight instead. We're all over the place this week, but that's normally on Tuesday night, but it is tonight. Then James Fox Higgins has his regular James Fox Higgins show, 10:30 p.m. Melbourne time, after Uncuckables, and then maybe a Friday show as well. And then Dusty Bogan just goes to air whenever he wants. But I might just. You're going off in the chat now, so I might just end it now. I'll see you all tomorrow night. If you want to support the production of Wilmsrun, another Unshackled show, since I haven't got super chats at the moment, you can take an Unshackled membership at theunshackled.net/membership or directly donate theunshackled.net/donate. And we're also on subscribestar.com/theunshackled and have our online store at theunshackled.net/store. All right, thank you so much for your company tonight. You'll hear more from me tomorrow. I'm working on some finally a few feature articles for theunshackled.net, so keep an eye out for those. I will see you again soon, and thank you so much for watching.
Thanks for tuning in to Wilmsfront. Visit timwilms.com or Rational Rise TV to view the archive of episodes, and keep visiting theunshackled.net to view all our shows, and to keep up with the latest real news and analysis.